Mr. Expedient.
Yes, now we'll finish with Professor Modog, your last statement. And
I think I had every right to post controversial materials on the board, and I think Farhin has every right to protest and every right to boycott, and that's a peaceful means of protest, and I support the right to boycott. However, I deny that I am a racist, I deny that I was motivated by racism, and I deny that this whole discussion is about racism.
Okay, thank you much. Thank you, Nick Saikon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Modog, for being here. Thank you, Farhin Hakim.
Thank you.
I am Al-Hussein Unjai. Thanks.
You've been listening to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly news magazine produced in collaboration with community radio stations across the country, including this one, KFAI in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The Pacifica Network distributes Sprouts, and our distribution manager is Ursula Rudenberg. Tune in next week for another edition of Radio from the Grassroots.
On Free Radio, it's Bathrop's Piers Broadsides, Civil Rights in Santa Cruz. Let's go find them with Robert Norse. That's me. Stay with us from 6 to 8 for, well, lots of things. Stay tuned and you'll find out. But not with a second-hand Saturday night special. No, downtown plays Russian roulette with a brand new SJPD revolver. One bullet for injustice, one bullet for intolerance, and one bullet for the self-hating sellout Latino capulero that will never bust enough Mexicans, harass enough Chicanos, or beat the shit out of enough cholos to feel equal to his Caucasian counterparts. You see, downtown when you're brown, Officer Lopez is hunting down Chicanos like the Terminator, hoping in vain that one day he may be able to wake up and scrub the brown out of downtown, or at the very least, out of his own skin. Downtown. Downtown when you're brown, the muffled sound of injustice is drowned out by the boom, boom, boom of tricked out Impalas and carried out many drugs as the cat calls of oppression are heard up and down Santa Clara streets, and beautiful Latinos strut by on 6 deep in midnight blue Buick Rivieras with gold smokes and silver crucifixes hanging from the rearview mirror. Downtown when you're brown on a Friday night, all the signs say no cruising zone, but what they really mean is no. Because SJPD will pull you over for being downtown and brown, and for no other reason, and you will find yourself at the corner of 27th and Santa Clara at a McDonald's parking lot, surrounded by 4 police cruisers, while 2 pigs in SWAT gear search your car illegally, and a 3rd one frisks you. And now I'm not talking about no pussy little frisk like you see in front of a club. I'm talking about a real motherfucking frisk like they do on cops when they tell you to spread your legs, put your hands on the hood of the car, and they pat you down so good you think you're getting a hand job. And you know, if they don't find nothing on you, if they don't find nothing on you, oh shit, look out downtown, cause somewhere someone's getting arrested for being brown. And downtown someone's getting beat to a pulp.
welcome to Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. As mentioned before, I'm Robert Norris, and I hope you stay with me through the show or call in, even better, become a part of the show. Call in number 427-3772, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. And that's what we are broadcasting to you from, in, on, and around. That's us, Free Radio Santa Cruz. If you want to check the chat room, where I'm also kind of keeping an eye, it's pagesincolor.com. Nobody's on there right now, but I'll try to keep an occasional peek at that. That's if you want to go to pagesincolor.com and you've got some comments to make because you can't get through on the phone or for some other reason, I'll keep looking there. But again, try the number 427-3772 if you have comments to make of any kind, whether it's about the recent election or upcoming city council meeting on Tuesday. Since it's the second Tuesday of the month, city council did not meet 2 days ago. They'll be meeting next Tuesday, and that's when the amendments in the panhandling law return, and possibly some other stuff too, but I'm not quite clear on that, and I won't know until, well, I'll know pretty soon, but you won't know unless you go to the library and check it out, or go online in a day or so when the city council, the Santa Cruz City Council, posts its agenda. You can Google for Santa Cruz City Council, and you'll find the agenda, and you'll find out what's coming up on Tuesday if you like to follow such things as I seem to do and tend to do. I'm going to be trying to finish off my discussion of the parking garage paranoia law, as I call it, the law the Santa Cruz City Council passed on May 23rd that goes into effect, I believe, on June 22nd, possibly the 21st, that would make it a criminal act punishable by a fine of, I guess it's $124, is what Matt Farrell said, the head of the public Works Department's head of the parking area, the parking authority at the city council. That's the fine, $124. And it'll be a fine if you spend any time at all in a parking garage, and there are four of them in town, city parking garage downtown. That is those that are run by the city. Two of them are pay garages. Two of them are free garages. And if you spend any time at all there, and you're not parking a vehicle or a bike, that's illegal unless you're walking directly through, unless you have a permit, unless you're a parking employee on city business, or unless you are engaged in a certain specific unspecified kind of free speech activity in the unspecified free speech posted zones, according to the unspecified free speech rules. And I'll be keeping an eye on that and contacting Matt Farrell to get more information on that when I can. There are some people who are talking about protesting this law. If you are actually a parker, if you have a vehicle, either a bicycle or a car, and you are parking it there, you will not be allowed to spend more than 15 minutes. It's not clear whether that means 15 minutes total coming and going, or 15 minutes coming and 15 minutes going, or 15 minutes coming, forgetting the book you left in your car, going back to get it, wanting to listen to something, perhaps from a tape in your car, and it's not clear how much time you're going to have, but there is a 15-minute deadline after which you can be warned, and then you can be cited. And you don't have to be warned in every single case. You have to have been warned within a reasonable period of time. So if you've been warned the day before, if you're a regular parker there and you happen to come back again to your car and the person watching thinks you've been there for more than 15 minutes, he or she can either call a police officer or someone else who can cite you. I think they may require a police officer to cite. I've got to check on that. A host or city employee can warn you. I think they may be able to cite you, too. Anyway, let's hear more of the city council discussion that took place. I want to get this on tape and archived and available for people to listen to at some future time, because there may be both a legal challenge, and I'm hoping there will be a challenge on the streets. That is to say that people will disobey this law, that people will decide that these are public spaces that need to continue to be run publicly, and that we need to be treated as ordinary human beings, not as potential criminals, when we go into these areas and have the normal rights, the normal kinds of respect that we have as ordinary people in our vehicles and outside our vehicles, taken away because city officials suddenly believe that it's appropriate to give the police those kinds of powers and to demand of us that we police ourselves in this way, making it illegal to sit in your vehicle for more than 15 minutes, for instance. So let's hear more from the city council. The public comment period is over on this, or was over, in this tape we're listening to from May 23rd. And you'll be hearing Councilmember Tony Madrigal, who ended up supporting the law. He's talking about it, and I will, of course, be interrupting with my occasional interjections. Feel free to interrupt yourself if you'd like. You can call in again. 427-3772 is the number to call.
See, this as a worker safety issue, and Ryan, you took the questions I was going to ask, so thank you. But I do see this as a worker safety issue. To the young people that talk about what would you do if this was your children, I'm also thinking, what would I do if these workers were my children, or these workers were my brothers and sisters who would, you know, come to work every day, dedicate their lives to cleaning up the city and improving our community. What would I do if they were subjected to this kind of treatment every day and this type of abuse? And so that's one of the reasons I'm supporting this motion. I do have a question.
And again, it just has to be said, since new listeners may be tuning in, the kinds of abuse that they're talking about are broken bottles left around, angry comments from campers who've been woken up, piles of poo-poo left behind because bathrooms are closed, or sometimes even when bathrooms are not, they've been complaints about needles. There was one complaint from Leslie Scanagatti of the SEIU around a homeless masturbator. There have been complaints of the rare assault that happens in terms of an actual assault, a series of complaints. But the problem that a lot of us had with the whole discussion was that none of this was very well documented. It was anecdotal. Mike Rotkin claimed that a lot of the information came from phone calls and emails he received, but he declined to make it public, and he declined to ask the police department for its specific arrest or citation stats around criminal behavior in the parking garages compared with a year ago or compared with other locations in the city. So we have no way of knowing if there's a particularly bad crime problem other than through the concerns of the friends of Ryan Coonerty, the guy who introduced this legislation at the Santa Cruz City Council, and Matson and Cynthia Mayer Matthews downtown, and some certain conservative merchants. So it's not documented what's gone down. That was one of the primary concerns, and also the idea that safety is helped by having fewer people there rather than more people present. By removing people from the parking garage, you're creating a safer situation, was also challenged by a number of folks, and those concerns were never actually addressed at all by any city council members or staff members or anything. So worker safety is always an issue and an important issue, and so is public safety, but you have to have a clear picture of what's going on and a clear sense of how to address it. Maybe suggestions that were made where workers carry around cell phones, or they could have an immediate 911 call in case they were ever really threatened, because of all the parking garage workers finally came up with a written chronology of the concerns they had over a period of 6 months, and only 5 of some 80 of those concerns involved the call to the police. A lot of them were a suspicious person, camper, group of people hanging out, there's some vandalism, some other concerns. But again, there was a real problem in terms of documenting anything real, and it seemed like this is a measure that didn't pass the, as Mike Rotkin likes to say, the straight face test, but apparently passed his test. Continuing with the city council meeting.
The at any prior point in time issue, and I wanted to ask representative from the police department, you know, given the fact that it is kind of an indefinite period of time that was pointed out by the ACLU representative, I guess my basic question is this going to lead to people getting their picture taken and whatnot? Because I'd hate to see that kind of, for lack of a better word, profiling start to happen.
Good afternoon, Mayor Matthews, members of the council. Councilmember Madrigal, are you asking in regards to the warning that we give if we
yes.
take a picture of the person at the time? No. No. The officer will contact the person. They will take their name, write it in their notebook. We also have a means at the police department through our records-keeping system to keep track of the warnings that we give, but they will not be taking photographs.
So that's supposed to be reassuring, but of course there's going to be a an extensive new area of criminalization where there was no crime before. Instead of addressing real crimes in the parking garages, and Rotkin has claimed he can't do that because by the time you get there, the criminals are gone, or people are afraid to file complaints, or those are the two main reasons. The judicial system doesn't work well in that way, or it's hard to prove the elements of the crime, none of which he documented in any real way. He has decided to make it criminal to be there at all, over 15 minutes in the parking garages. And I might add, and I've forgotten to mention this, in parking lot, the open lot, not the garage, number 9, which is the lot on Elm Street, across from the Elm Street Mission, the one most used by homeless people before the Elm Street meal in the evening, in the early evening. And that's already resulted in people being driven into this huge cluster along the sidewalk, essentially blocking the sidewalk, and making it difficult for people to comport themselves with either dignity or comfort in that area, but of course meeting the needs of the kind of the theoretical move along the undesirables agenda that the staff has been using all over town, ranging from setting up the fenced off area outside New Leaf Market to get rid of social undesirables, removing benches in front of the Pacific Cookie Company, then removing benches in front of Borders, setting up unsittable planter areas in front of the Pacific Trading Company and Rosie McCann's, removing benches at Elm and Pacific, setting an ATM, or I should say a change-making machine there, when there were two others within 100 or within 200 feet of the same location, but they put in such a machine because that means you can't sit or panhandle within 50 feet, removing again another group of people. And now they're trying to remove the place people went to, which was one of the places that the group from the street went to, was this parking lot. And, you know, I'm not saying parking lots and garages don't have their problems. I'm sure they do, or this issue wouldn't even arise. But the idea that the way to deal with it is by ramming through a measure without any kind of real documentation or real alternatives is just not the way to go.
But I wanted to know, I just want to be clear on that intent as we're here passing this. So thank you.
Okay. So Madrigal is showing how what a great controller of the police department, how attentive he is to the concerns of the DIY first night, don't take my picture, don't surveil us without adequate justification, unless there's some real serious criminal violent behavior going down. Of course, the problem with that particular interpretation of Councilmember Tony Madrigal's approach here is that what we have around that issue, which is the political surveillance went on last night of the New Year's Eve march, which was then became a big scandal because Deputy Police Chief Vogel, who's the police officer answering these questions at the microphone that Tony Madrigal is posing, investigated himself under the orders from Dick Wilson. So the real person to blame is not Vogel, but Wilson, who allowed it. And, of course, the city council that knew about it and had no problem with it. And they've gone underground and are supposed to be cooking up some better surveillance guidelines, but instead the police chief, Howard Scarry, has written the guidelines. I pause on this kind of side road here. I go aside on this issue because Madrigal acts like he's concerned about people's pictures being taken by the police. Yet he is allowing, as a council member, without a peep out of him, the lack of there being any meaningful protection for people engaged in political activities against political surveillance. Because the only guidelines we have now are those created by Howard Scarry, our police chief, sort of out of thin air when suddenly the police auditor revealed that, no, it wouldn't be okay for the deputy police chief to investigate his own investigation, his own decision to infiltrate and document and gather files on and reports on and circulate reports on the peaceful New Year's Day, New Year's Eve protest. No, that wouldn't be okay. And so Scarry said, oh, well, okay, we have these new guidelines. And the guidelines are essentially if you have committed a criminal act or are contemplating a criminal act, anybody in the group, then they have the right to surveil you. So in theory, they could send in someone who had an infraction ticket and then use that as an excuse to send in somebody else to surveil the whole group. You know, or they could use the fact that one person has an outstanding warrant in some other area as the basis to surveil the group. I'm not saying that they would necessarily do this, but why can't the police department be candid and straightforward and set up some meaningful guidelines? They've had one meeting, maybe two, to discuss this issue in the last 6 months since this issue came up. We're already in June. Madrigal has said absolutely nothing about this at City Council and made no public statements whatsoever about it. Now suddenly he's talking about his concern about people being photographed. The real concern here with this parking garage permit, parking garage paranoia law, it's also a permit law, it requires a permit if you want to, I don't know, sit down and play a guitar and under a parking garage or come in out of the rain, you got to get a permit or buy a car, and you can only do it then for 15 minutes. The problem is this does much more heavily involve the police. And, yes, they are going to write down your name, and, yes, a record will be kept of you. No, not a photographic record, probably. Yes, there will be a photographic record if, for instance, they've decided that they gave you a warning 3 days before and now they're going to arrest you, and you challenge the arrest. You say, wait a minute, hold it. What are you citing me for? I haven't even been warned here. I don't know what you're talking about. And Pam Bechtel suddenly remembers that the CSO downtown is very eager with her ticket book, says, no, I saw you doing this, 3 days ago or 3 weeks ago or a year and a half ago. Actually, they said it would have to be within the last 6 months or something. That's not really clear how long it would have to be. Then you might get your picture taken. You might get arrested and taken to jail. Or you would certainly have to appear in court to pay a $124 fine or address the issue before one of the judges that is in bed with the city on this issue and not particularly concerned about the constitutionality of this law.
From that spot, perhaps you could tell me more about that records-keeping system.
This is Ed Porter.
Since a couple members of the public raised the point that record would last an infinite length of time. I assume records-keeping means it goes into the computer. So does it last an infinite length of time, or currently, without any other direction, how long would it last?
I'm not exactly sure what the records retention on that is. The city attorney may be able to answer that question better than I. The officers fill out something called a field interview card when we interview people regarding various contacts in the field. They take their name and identifying information, and then they make a notation on that particular card as to why they've contacted the individual. In this particular case, it would be a warning for violation of 9.64 of the Santa Cruz Municipal Code. That information then gets entered into our computer system so that another officer who may contact that same individual can run a check on them through our local records of the police department and find out that earlier that day or yesterday or the day before or whenever it may have been.
Very long answer, which he already answered. The answer is, I don't know how long the records are kept. But the interesting thing about this is Porter's demeaning way of asking the question, not demeaning to Deputy Police Chief Vogel, who perhaps should be demeaned given the kind of behavior he's been engaging in terms of investigating his own investigation. And by the way, Vogel's a nice guy. I don't say this to put him down, I am attacking the process that he used and the fact that city council members seem to think it's absolutely fine. It isn't. No, what Porter is attacking is he's attacking the idea that people should be concerned that there's a criminalization process going on. He's demeaning it. He's saying, is there any real concern that these records will be kept for an infinite amount of time? Come on now. And, of course, what he's learning is people don't know. Now, it's probably going to be 5 years, I think, is the ultimate thing they decided, 3 or 5 years. But still a long time to keep records on so trivial a thing.
For the violation.
This ordinance, as it's proposed here, was in effect today, and you were making such a stop, and you found that the warning was a year old. What do you think, under the terms of this ordinance, you would do right now?
I think that's going to end up being a policy decision that gets made down the line. I think probably a year ago, that's probably an unreasonable amount of time to expect that a person would, have been warned pursuant to the ordinance. I think it would have to be done more recently than that.
Again, Porter is not trying to protect the public by saying, well, maybe we should add a time limit. You have to have been warned within the last 2 weeks or something. He's simply scoffing at the idea and creating a somewhat preposterous hypothetical. Well, if it's been a year and you stop somebody, what would you do? Well, he says he doesn't know for sure, and he acknowledges there's no policy guidelines. It sounds like the police are going to set the policy guidelines, not the city council or the public. So we have here another case of an individual who most people elected in 2000 thinking he was some kind of liberal, But in fact, he's been revealed to be just the opposite, passing the very repressive laws downtown, the downtown ordinances that make it illegal to sit down on 95% of the sidewalk, that make it illegal to peacefully have a sign after dark asking for spare change, even if you're completely silent, that created the move-along law that says you have to move every hour, even if you're a political table engaging in a picket in front of a particular business or building. This is the liberal Ed Porter. And, of course, I saw the liberal face of Ed Porter when he had me arrested and removed from a meeting because I was tape recording it, openly tape recording it for Free Radio Santa Cruz in November 2002. This was around the downtown ordinances. And it was two official subcommittees of a subcommittee of the Downtown Commission and the Downtown Issues Task Force talking about it was open to the public, it was announced, but I was arrested because I refused to turn off my tape recorder. That's Ed Porter. And it's here he is again defending the police department. He's one of the three people on the Public Safety Committee. That's the fig leaf group that has taken the place of the Citizens Police Review Board that was destroyed by Ed Porter and the other city council members in 2003. And instead, we have his little group with Rotkin, himself, Porter, and Ryan Coonerty, that's now Supervisor Neil Coonerty's son, all together sitting in and essentially mostly canceling the public meetings of the Public Safety Committee. They've been canceling meeting after meeting. And then when they do hold meetings, they don't allow the public to make statements at any length or on the subject that they supposedly were holding the meeting on. We saw that at the last well-attended meeting of the Public Safety Committee in, I believe it was January or February. People wanted to talk, and Porter just said, oh, well, you can send us your information email or write it to us, even though people had gathered to talk to him about the issues around guidelines against political surveillance, or to make sure the political surveillance was, there should be surveillance of criminals, but not for political surveillance. And right now, of course, we have all this is at the police department's discretion. We've seen what that leads to in terms of DIY last night.
Situation, and this may be the city attorney's question, so be ready, John, but is this the kind of situation where the council could adopt a policy that such records be purged after some period of time, like 6 months or something like that? Or is that something that the chief and the internal process dictates, or state law?
There is a very detailed records retention schedule that's been adopted by the police department, so we'd probably, if that's what the council wants to look at, we'd bring back the records retention schedule to see where that fits in. But
something like this, though, that didn't exist before, would it?
Well, these do exist. They're field interview cards, so it is a record. Yeah. That is.
And they already give warnings on all sorts of other things.
The other issue on warnings, it should be noted, is that pursuant to the council's prior direction, all of these facilities are going to be prominently posted.
So what they're doing here, and that's John Barisoni, city attorney, talking, is they are poo-pooing the idea that this is a rather bizarre law that suddenly criminalizes all kinds of previously innocent behavior, and therefore people who either inadvertently or even with some annoyance violate it should not have long records on it as distinguished from, say, warnings for other offenses, which might be real criminal offenses, though in many cases they're not. Things like sitting on the sidewalk has become criminal after a warning if you do so within 14 feet of a building. So instead of getting a straight answer, which is no, I mean, which is yes or no on this, we get the answer which directs the policy. The answer should have been, yes, you can, Ed Porter, create such a policy you want. Instead, it's, well, it's a very complicated schedule, and we'll send it back to you if you want, but there's no need to, because it's a warning is given on other matters, and this is going to be prominently posted signs. That doesn't really address the issue of whether they're prominently posted signs or not. If somebody gets a warning and it's going on a record and they're going to be listed and their name is going to be listed, when are those records destroyed? And Porter initially seemed to be saying, well, we should be perhaps a little concerned about this. His concern evaporates if he ever had it.
Warning signs themselves. So in addition to the personal warnings, there's going to be warning signs that are up.
Okay. My other question is more in general about
Ed, can I follow up the last thing you raised first? Quickly, with a question?
For 30 seconds.
Related question?
Yeah, no, it's very quick. I think the issue is, and Ms. Ann can respond, not so much the retention of this card, but the question of how long an officer believes that, you know, the warning's still valid, you know, yes. As opposed to, like, time for a new warning. And so I think that's the question rather than the whole retention policy issue. But I'll leave
and
that
other
to you. But, you
know. Really related question is, should the council then consider, related to this ordinance, setting a policy about that? Is that appropriate under John's belief, under the police department's view?
The last time I remember a policy being set on an ordinance was pertaining to the louder, unruly gathering ordinance that was adopted last year, last summer, and I believe Council Member Rodkin at the time wrote the policy on that. So I would say it would be appropriate, given that we've done it before.
Okay. And then my other...
It's all with you.
My other question is maybe more specific to this ordinance. I'm certainly impressed that there's a need to address the problem that's been presented to us. There's no question about that. I want to address that problem. And I raised the question last time and sort of hinted that you should answer it, but didn't ask you to answer it. And that is, if you could comment on my opinion that the people who are currently engaging in this kind of unpleasant and illegal behavior are people who don't have any regard for the current laws presently, and to those people, it's not going to make any difference that this new ordinance is on the book. So it violates two ordinances instead of one, or three ordinances instead of two, or however many things. I don't have any reason to believe that you can do the additional enforcement that is needed here. And my perception is that our employees, and I do want to address their concerns, and I do want to make them feel safe on the job, they need to be able to push an electronic button and summon someone from the police department within 90 seconds or something like that. That's the kind of thing they need to do, and they don't have anything like that. So if we were to pass this ordinance, what confidence could you give me that we could change the situation by using this ordinance, where right now we can't change the situation?
Porter should be given his due here. This is a very good question, and probably the reason he eventually voted against the law in the second reading. Fitzmaurice was the only one who voted against this law when it had its first reading. All laws undergo two readings at City Council, 2 weeks apart, usually. This one required an extra reading because they changed the law substantially. But this is the second reading of the law, of the final revised law, which added a 30-minute period for disabled people, and which added, there was an additional provision as well. But it was, again, removed the parking lots completely except for parking lot number 9. Those were the main, effectively, those were the only changes. But then this situation comes up, and Porter asks the question, if they aren't going to obey one law, why will they obey another, and where are the police resources to do this?
Gives the police department an additional tool so that we can minimize the opportunity people have to commit crimes or other types of behavior in the parking garages. It gives us, at this point, when we contact somebody who's involved in suspicious activity in the parking garages that doesn't rise to the level of criminal activity, we contact them, we talk to them, and at that point, if we determine that no crime has occurred, we leave. This ordinance gives us the ability to ask people to leave, and my feeling on that is that will minimize the opportunity that they have to commit criminal activity once we're no longer there.
Now, the key issue here, of course, is just, and this should have been very thoroughly examined, what are those instances where people are not engaged in criminal behavior, but why the police think the behavior is suspicious? It could be that that's a very valid consideration. It could be that that's police paranoia or over-militant police perception or a very conservative sense that certain kinds of hanging out behavior is just bad, even though it's not criminal at all. But we have no way of knowing which case is true, because nobody has asked those questions of this deputy police chief. Nobody asked those questions of the staff. Nobody asked those questions of the downtown commission. No one in this council said, okay, well then, give us an example of the kinds of behavior you found that can't be handled under the current situation. Give us, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 or 10 instances of, you know, what that would be. And you know, you're probably going to get them saying things like, well, campers won't even go in there and pretend to be, you know, awake when we arrive because they won't even be allowed to be in there at all because they don't have vehicles. So they, the whole problem of sleepers or campers being cleared out will be removed because they don't want to even take a chance on getting a ticket, whereas before they could sort of hang around and talk, and then when we came in, they would say, we're in a public space. Now they'd have to, you know, we'd have to actually find them sleeping. Now we don't have to find them sleeping. We just have to find them alive and breathing and without a vehicle. So that's a certain, there's a certain sense of truth in that. But I'd like to hear it from the police officers as to what specific kinds of crimes they feel require criminalizing everybody who stays there for more than 15 minutes. Or anybody that's with a vehicle, and without a vehicle, criminalizing anybody at all who isn't walking directly through. What is so important to make, that we should make it a crime to come in out of the rain?
Calls 911, I presume, and they say, I'm threatened by an individual. Isn't that sufficient for you to ask them to move along?
No. It depends on if the threats rise to the level of criminal activity. If they make death threats against them, any type of terrorist threats, yes, that's true. But we get a lot of calls that just pertain to suspicious behavior, people who may not want to press charges against somebody. They just, you know, don't feel comfortable walking to their car, so they want us to ask people to leave. And absent criminal behavior, that puts us in a tight spot.
And that is the issue, really. People don't want to press charges. So what they want to do instead of give the people, make people afraid of doing what had previously been completely innocent, under the fear that some conservative person may say, "Get out of here." It's sort of establishing a new no trespassing, no loitering law for everyone, including people with vehicles, because you're only allowed to be there for 15 minutes. And the idea that normal crimes can't be dealt with by real complaints, so people can't be trained and encouraged to say, "Okay, if you feel like you're being harassed or menaced, you call up," or we set up little telephones. You can call up and say, "I feel like I'm being menaced." You know, I mean, I might not agree with that interpretation in some particular case. I might agree with it in another. But at least that would be a real response that isn't overbroad. It allows for people who've had some particular problems in the past with some other people. None of that is being concretely proposed. Instead, a catch-all law.
Leave.
Thank you.
Tim.
Yeah, this is the discomfort ordinance. When you feel uncomfortable, you can ask them to leave. I want to first of all say that on the loud and unruly party ordinance, we just got a report that said there were 116 calls and no citations were issued. Yeah, I want to say that because I voted against that ordinance, but I want to point out that I think our police are going to administer any of these rules in as fair a way as they possibly can and not try to look for ways to punish people. At the same time, that sign that's going to be posted in those garages is going to say, "You get out of here before."
And just briefly a comment, that's the unruly party at your peril ordinance that Fitzmaurice is talking about. Again, another good vote by Fitzmaurice last summer. While it's true that presumably there are 116 calls and no complaints, no citations issued, that was after a policy was specifically worked out by Rotkin and others around the law. No such policy has been worked out around this law. Instead, it was passed right on through. And I'm not aware that any policy is envisaged that would say, you know, records will be purged after 2 months, warnings have to happen within 30 days, or it's considered a dead warning, they have to warn you again. You know, we're going to be reasonable in other ways around this law and how we enforce it, exigent circumstances, we won't be enforcing it in the rain and so forth. None of that has been worked out, none of that is available, none of that is being even committed to here. So that concerns me. Yeah, let's see here.
Citations were issued. Yeah, I want to say that because I voted against that ordinance, but I want to point out that I think our police are going to administer any of these rules in as fair a way as they possibly can and not try to look for ways to punish people. At the same time, that sign that's going to be posted in that, those garages is going to say, you get out of here in, before 15 minutes are up, is going to affect people like me who like to obey the law and also who like to sit in their car and listen to 20 minutes of the baseball game or whatever they want to do. You know, they just sit there and do whatever it is that they do. Like, well, Jenny's in the store, I'm out in the car. I don't, you know, I know it's crazy, but that's the way life happens in those crazy ways. And I know the police aren't going to come along and cite me, but then I'm going to feel that I have to obey that law the way I obey a stop sign out in the middle of the desert, you know, because that's the type of person that I think most of the people in this community are. They're going to look for ways to abide by the rules. And I think they're going to find those signs annoying. And I don't think they're necessarily going to address, as Ed suggested, the issue that our workers face in terms of the menacing behavior or the criminal behavior that they have to run into at 5 o'clock in the morning when they come to work. But it is going to affect everyone else 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in every other case. And it's those warning signs. I'm looking forward to seeing how people might respond to those. Because I do. I know everybody here has seen those people, like 50-year-old guys like me, sitting out in the parking lot while somebody was running into Long's to do some shopping for half an hour or whatever. I know that everybody's seen that. And now you won't be able to do that. And we don't have a lot of benches in town. And we don't have a lot of places where people can have a private space and talk on their cell phone or read a book or listen to the baseball game for 20 minutes. So we don't have that. Those opportunities everywhere, and this is going to be an important opportunity. In fact, I've left my aging mother-in-law in the car while I went in to do some shopping, and she was sitting out there at the curb, you know, and she was perfectly capable of doing that, but she didn't necessarily need to come in and walk around the store with me for a half an hour or an hour to do that kind of activity. She needed to just, you know, have her space and sit there, and she's not going to get cited by our police officers, I know that. But is she going to feel, or is anyone going to feel, that in order to be responsive and to be law-abiding, they need to pay attention to the rules that are posted in these parking garages? Well, of course she's going to feel that. People feel that. People are law-abiding. People are responsible, and they want to be cooperative and all of those kinds of things, and they tend not to break the law. And, in fact, that's an important point for this. I would like to get back to that one statement in the ordinance that does say that you can be cited for purposes other than motor vehicle, bicycle, or pedestrian purposes of any kind and of any duration, I assume. And I suppose because you are considered a suspicious person, I assume people are going to make those decisions in a judicious way and try to decide which persons are more menacing than others. And my 80-year-old mother-in-law won't be one of them, I hope, you know. I assume. That's unfortunately leads to all kinds of difficulties in terms of the administration of it. And so at least the time limit kind of put everybody on an equal footing. And, in fact, when the quoted piece in the ACLU piece from Deputy Chief Vogel says, in court, the police department would have to articulate that in an irrefutable way that a person exceeded the time limit, and if you know that kind of thing. So it all based his comment was based completely on the time limit, and I believe that's why the ACLU brought up the point, and I think it's a really valid point. I think this should be at least driven by what it is that it's perceived to be driven by, which is that you have a certain amount of time to do your duty in that place. And so, therefore, it should be the word "and" should be in the ordinance, and not any activity other than bicycle parking, motor vehicle parking, or pedestrian purposes, then becomes citable. That just broadens this out much too far, and we lose the nicety of the 15-minute rule.
And what Fitzmaurice is talking about here. And you're tuned to Free Radio, by the way, in case you didn't know. We're listening to Santa Cruz City Council meeting of May 23rd and its passing of the 15-minute parking garage paranoia law, which goes into effect in about 2 weeks. What he's talking about is a proposal by the ACLU to say, how about making it 15 minutes for everybody have to leave, not 15 minutes for people in cars and vehicles and 0 minutes for people who are who don't have cars or vehicles. And that, of course, is rejected by the city council.
Because of that or in that particular paragraph, I think the ACLU did us a service by pointing that out. So I would... Not expecting to have a second, I don't know that I would move it, but I would certainly like to see an amendment to this ordinance that puts the word and after 9.64.010 in that paragraph at the top of page 20.20-2. The I think their point about the labor union's speech, I'm taking, you know, I know that Ryan and Mike have suggested that this is an irrelevant claim because they're protected by federal law, and of course Ryan's an attorney and knows more about federal law than I do, but the ACLU has brought this up, and I think it's a relevant point, and I do believe that a labor union might do hand billing in a covered area, or they may even put things underneath the windshield wipers. I don't know, even though Mike finds that not acceptable, they may do that. Other people do that. And we wouldn't want people to be arrested for doing that type of activity.
Yeah, Rotkin said he found it outrageous that people should put items under windshield wipers, and he thought that everyone's going to be happy that now they can't do that because the law would make it illegal for you to walk into a parking garage or parking lot number 9 unless you have a vehicle or a bike or unless you're walking directly through. So you wouldn't be able to go through the lot and leave little flyers on the cars. Unless they have some special provision that they post as a free speech provision. And it'll be interesting to see what they're going to do about that. But again, it's all unnecessary, extremely tangled and complicated, and contrary to common sense. And that's the primary problem.
They urge the council to ensure that the legislative history reflects an intent that the designation of speech-related conduct areas protect lawful labor union activity. So I would like to make that part of the legislative history of this for the record. That the legislative history reflect an intent that the designation of speech-related conduct protects lawful labor union activity. So just to try to include that without an amendment. The infinite duration was I think, addressed reasonably. I know that our police officers will be reasonable about that.
I have a problem with that. I mean, I'm not saying that some officers won't be reasonable, but why should the policy be cooked up in the bowels of the police station? Why shouldn't there be a public policy saying that, you know, you got to be warned within a previous 2-month period so that people can know exactly what it is, so that officers will not have the temptation to behave badly with members of the public, so that there will be a specific time period. Fitzmaurice's trust and faith in the police department is... I think it's misplaced. As I said before, the police department has, according to his stats, been acting appropriately in the party at your peril law, but only because they were required to do so by a policy. Not necessarily only because, but they certainly had that additional motivation. So here instead we see him actually making a number of good suggestions about the law, and then eventually when they're turned down, voting against it. But Fitzmaurice has shown previously, unless he's changed his mind, that he might favor this law if it were only, let's say, at night. So that it's night, it's okay to remove everybody from the parking garages after 15 minutes. Although it's not clear because he's making a much more eloquent statement, a more elaborate statement than he did 2 and 4 weeks before when this issue came up previously. And he opposed it then, but he indicated then he would favor a much smaller law. Now it sounds like he's finally getting the idea, which is that there's just too much ordinary behavior that's being outlawed by this law.
The warning language, is that it? That came from the camping. I thought that was reasonable, and it talked about what a warning ought to be. And I hope that since this memo has been entered into our legislative record, that's in the legislative record as well. But that's a reasonable way. The chief, I think, and the police officers, they create their own policies with regard to this. They don't necessarily check them with us. And I think that's a reasonable way of expressing the policy, and I hope they will do that. And then, of course, the review after a 12-month period, but I'm assuming that we will review this as well. So mostly it just comes down to the word and in that paragraph, and I suggested that anyway, I'll move that we substitute the word and for the word or in the paragraph at the top of page 22.
I'll second.
Tony Madrigal seconding.
Without a whole lot of discussion, can we have an up and down vote on that? Do people feel comfortable?
Absolutely, sir.
Well, I want to know, does that change the substantive
right.
nature?
Well, do we have to redo this whole thing again?
Yeah, because
yes.
back
yes.
in the
okay.
second reading.
Okay. With that understanding, let's have a vote.
Adopted.
Is that okay? I mean, I'm trying to
adopt it and then bring it back for revision.
Meet the clock here. All right. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no.
No.
No. That fails 4-3.
And what happened here was Matthew's primary argument, and nobody said a word about it, was that if they adopted this resolution saying that everybody has to be given a 15-minute warning before leaving parking lots, not just people in vehicles and not just people on parking bicycles, that they would have to come back for another meeting and pass that again because it would have been a substantive change. So she would rather abandon the civil liberties of ordinary people without vehicles, it sounds like, unless she makes specific efforts to introduce a new piece of legislation in the next council session or the next couple of council sessions, because she doesn't want this bill to come back again. So in the interest of convenience, possibly because she has crammed everything onto the afternoon agenda, Cynthia Matthews, the woman you hear speaking, is the mayor of Santa Cruz. She is the chairperson of the council. She makes the decisions as to what goes on the agenda and where. And she has made it a practice of cramming things onto the afternoon agenda and making a very light evening agenda. That resulted in this particular council meeting in giving people 1 minute to speak each on the next item that we're going to be listening to on this show, which is the panhandling ordinance, which has come up again. And actually, we'll probably be talking about that at greater length on Sunday. The show returns Sunday between 9:30 and 1 in the afternoon. I encourage you to join me then. In case you're trying to call in and have forgotten the number, I'll remind you, it's 427-3772, and the chat room is pagesincolor.com. If you'd like to jump on the chat room, I see nobody seems to have done so, pagesincolor.com. And again, the phone line is 427-3772. So I believe the three votes were Madrigal, Porter, and Fitzmaurice, who are arguably probably the liberal bloc in most cases on the city council, with a few interesting exceptions like the Saturday market. So let's continue listening to the Santa Cruz City Council meeting of May 23rd. You're tuned to Free Radio, www.freakradio.org at 101.1 FM.
So we'll proceed. Are you done with your comments, Tim?
I believe I am. I will vote no, and I do appreciate the hard work that people do to try to figure out solutions to difficult problems. This just doesn't have to be the solution to this problem.
Mike, I have you next. Try and be brief.
I'm done.
Okay, Emily?
Wanted to say, speaking in support of Mike's motion, nobody likes this. Nobody up here sat here and tried to figure out some way to come up with yet another clumsy law to add to some other big arsenal of clumsy laws. And I think it very definitely, for me,
No, what they did was they accepted the staff's doing exactly that, making up another clumsy law to add to the arsenal of laws. Instead of looking for real solutions involving the public in a real way and finding some method that doesn't criminalize everybody else in town.
In support of Mike's motion, nobody likes this. Nobody up here sat here and tried to figure out some way to come up with yet another clumsy law to add to some other big arsenal of clumsy laws. And I think it very definitely, for me, is it an issue of safety. And I think I voted against the amendment because I would like to see, when we come back and look at this in a year, all kinds of small amendments that we would make to it.
So for the next year, it will be illegal for anyone to enter a parking lot, parking garage, or parking lot number 9 unless they have a vehicle or bicycle, because she wants to give it a year. She'll make it criminal for the next year for this to happen. That's why she didn't cast the vote that would have turned a 3-4 vote into a 4-3 vote. Emily Riley of Emily's Bakery. Drop in and buy a muffin from her and tell her how much you appreciate that.
All of the conversation about what you cannot no longer do in a parking garage is true and unfortunate, and very much why I was in favor of excluding all of the lots from this ordinance. And I'm glad that we did that, and I wish we had done it and excluded Lot 9 as well. But that isn't what happened. I think that it really isn't.
And in fact, she voted to include Lot 9 in the final vote. She could have voted against the ordinance generally if she wanted, but she didn't. And I guess the same kind of argument can be used on the streets. I would hate to declare martial law downtown and say you can't be here for more than 15 minutes getting your business done, going into your stores, getting back to your cars, being on your way. But public safety is the issue. Somebody made such an argument as that, you would hopefully sit up and take notice. But this is exactly the same argument that's being made for these garages without any meaningful documentation about the difference in crime rate between there and elsewhere in the city, there and a year before.
This again, and that we pay attention to it throughout the year and see actually what consequence is happening. But ultimately, you know, my mother's, one of her favorite sayings was, if it weren't for idiots, we wouldn't need any laws at all. And I'd say if it weren't for mean, selfish people.
I would have to say if it weren't for subservient city council members who want to essentially eat what the staff feeds them, we wouldn't need to be protesting this kind of stuff. We wouldn't need to be considering giving citations to innocent tourists in order to demonstrate that this is an abusive law and that it will have a negative effect on tourism, as Crow, for example, has proposed. We have a phone call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert.
Speak of the devil.
There's the devil.
Hey, the devil indeed. Well, Satan, what have you got to say for yourself?
Let's see. As far as Satan's concerned, they're doing great work. You got to keep prodding the homeless as much as possible. Because when they get to hell, they're going to be my main constituents. Anyway, a little off the subject here. Yesterday we got our first warning at the farmer's market from the guy who runs the farmer's market about our sound being too loud.
Now, you have a permit that allows you to play with amplified sound.
Amplified sound.
Go ahead.
It was sounding pretty good yesterday.
I was actually sitting next to the amplifier, and it was blasting my ears out as I tried to play chess.
What are you doing playing chess?
What right am I doing playing now? Chess? That's where the chess set was, unfortunately.
I know. It was kind of funny.
We're talking, by the way, about the musical event that happens every, what, between 3:30 and 7?
Yeah, well, they've got the permit for 4 to 7.
From 4 to 7 at the farmer's market. I guess it's parking lot number 4. And it's there where Food Not Bombs feeds. I guess it was significantly louder yesterday than in the past, don't you think?
Yeah, it was a little overboard. We usually try to keep our speakers facing away from the market, but Alan had everything set up before I got there. But there was a complaint, and I told him he'd work with it. But his attitude towards the end of the conversation was more like, yeah, I'll be on it, I'll make sure, you know. It was just, like, more condensating than actually working with me as far as the sound's concerned. Because what I like to do is, when I do get the sound set up, I like to go walk through the farmer's market and make sure that it sounds more like background music like you would hear at a Kmart. But not really Kmart music. You know, I'm not really there to, like, piss people off, you know.
At least not to piss off the farmer's market.
Or anybody playing chess right there next to my speakers.
Yeah, what about that, man? Let me ask you, who was this guy? Do you know his name?
It's the guy who runs the farmer's market. I don't. fucking know, man. I try to stay away from those people. Mm-hmm. They pissed me off in the past years when they wouldn't let Food Not Bombs get any of the produce that people were giving away. You know, and I've really stopped really, you know, partaking what fucking farmers market has.
Well, let me ask you, is that still the case?
Well, you know, we I don't know if the Food Not Bombs people have tried since, you know, there's been a big circulation of people through Food Not Bombs. But from our my understanding, I still think it's the case where the people who have run the farmers market tell the farmers not to give food to Food Not Bombers. But, you know, that can possibly change. I don't know.
I'd like to know about that because I know that there was periodically that's happened in the downtown area with Feed the People, the meal run by Sean Alini back about 10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And also I heard about 4 months ago that food being given out at the back of some restaurants at closing time. There was a sort of a petition being circulated by the Downtown Association getting people urging merchants not to allow this or requiring
them.
Yeah,
I know. They're always nice.
Now, I don't know. I never got confirmation on that, but it always makes me uncomfortable when that's happening.
Yeah, it's always a closed-door thing that they're trying to do.
Frankly,
you know?
It makes me angry when that happens, and
I want to expose
and subject to public humiliation, ridicule, and criticism those businesses that are pushing this kind of anti-homeless agenda.
I would say, too, you mm-hmm. know, not giving your food away that you're not going to eat and just throwing it away, I think, is an anti-homeless thing, period, with human beings.
Right.
So we're just going to have to see how this plays. And by the way, when I'm up there and there's some free time, feel free to grab the mic and plug your show and make speech. You know, that's always out there. When I get up there, sometimes I forget. I get a little nervous and, you know, I like to tell everybody about everything, but,
Well, I'll probably have a nice negative report on City Council. That'll be the day after City Council next Wednesday at the Farmers Market.
Yeah.
I mean,
you're always welcome, you know, because I when I set up those mics, everybody is free to say something or do something, you know. I like to keep it free like that. It's pretty cool. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Well, I'll never shut your mic off.
Or any kind of other adjective.
That was Emily Riley.
Oh, that was.
Emily Riley was interrupting you there. She'll have to wait. Go
she'll
ahead.
Just have to wait.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, what was I going to say? Yeah, this whole thing, we'll just have to see what happens next farmer's market. Hopefully you'll be around, so if there's any controversial stuff, we can get it on tape. Because I really feel that he has something on his agenda, as far as the sound's concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's going to even want to control the drumming as far as what he's figuring he's going
to
do.
Well, I would encourage you to, find out when the board of the Farmers Market meets and send someone to one of their meetings to, you know, suggest that these things be reasonably worked out. We don't want to have protests and boycotts and weird shit. You know, that there is a way.
Oh, yeah, because if that guy fucks with us, we'll just have a nice big boycott and protest it, and he'll be his worst fucking nightmare. But we'll just see how it plays out. I'm not too nervous about it for right now. But it was kind of funny. It was only after I talked about the Saturday's farmers market happening that I feel that there was any kind of complaint.
What do you mean? What do you mean? Only after you talked? I mean, only after you?
Well, I made a speech about the farmers market happening on Saturday, and it was kind of funny. Alan was like, "Well, I wanted to jump up there and tell you not to say that," and I was like, "Alan, there's no way in hell you're going to tell me what not to do as far as free speech is concerned." You know, that's the guy who plays the sitar, my buddy. You know, I was kind of surprised that he would even say something like that. Because, you know, the farmer's market on Wednesday has been very irritated about the farmer's market on Saturday. Matter of fact, they were so fucking irritated about it, they created their own farmer's market on Saturday, you know. But they're being real fucking weird, and I don't like it.
You say that there was, right after you made this announcement, is when the farmer's market guy came over?
No, actually, after I made this announcement and after, you know, we turned our amps out, Alan had told me that there was some complaints. Alan seems to know the guy who was running the farmer's market that particular day.
So he thought it was a response to your making the announcement?
I think so, because all of us are pretty keen about how far the music goes. Obviously, when you're near the speakers like you were unfortunately, the chess table was right there. It is very loud, but it's only 50 watts, and the sound doesn't actually travel that much further than where the trucks, you know, as far as being loud to where you're having a hard time communicating with somebody. It doesn't travel any further than where the big trucks park right across the way.
You know, I think it's a good idea, and I recommend to people out there to have a tape recorder for encounters with police or...
I know, we don't even have a fucking recorder.
Or disgruntled merchants. I mean, tape recorder costs 20, 22, 25 bucks at the,
I know,
you know, at Long's. And if you want, you can
not doing that.
You can borrow one of mine, yeah. But you do get in touch with me beforehand. Crow, anything else before I roll you off the air?
No, and I just like to give a shout-out to Radio Santa Cruz and how they suck for cutting your fucking hours.
They haven't? No. We actually talked about that.
Because I called up the station after you got off on Sunday, and I told them that Radio Santa Cruz sucks for cutting your hours. But I'm glad they didn't. Maybe they don't suck. Maybe they're very good.
Well, no. And in all fairness, that was a proposal that tried to give new programmers a chance to,
you know,
to have programs on the air and to make a uniform standard. That was the theory behind it. Partially out of self-interest, perhaps, partially because I feel this
I don't know. I can listen to your show all fucking day if I have a chance.
Well, most people are not so tolerant or so enthused, but I appreciate that, Greg.
Oh, dude, some of your stuff is so grand. I mean, last Sunday's program was just unbelievable.
Ron Anicet. He was great. The guy on the Bad Cop No Donut.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so
glad you aired that. I would have never known.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, buddy. I'll talk to you later.
Hey, thank you, Crow.
Bye-bye.
Phone lines are open, 427-3772. You're listening to Free Radio, 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. If you want to catch me off air, give me a call on the Huff line. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and the phone number is 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, 4833. You can also call Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective if you have information for them or need information from them, a donation for them. Or you possibly have a concern, whatever you've got, whatever you want. If it concerns the Free Radio Collective, the number to call is 427-4523. That's the voicemail. You can also go online to the website, freakradio.org, where you can make PayPal donations. Hey. You can...
The fact is that when some...
My goodness, that woman is always interrupting. That's what happens when you leave the pause button on too long. So that's those are numbers to call. And, of course, the best number to call on air on the studio is 427-3772. Back now to the rest of the City Council's discussion of the parking garage paranoia law. Vice Mayor Emily Riley is explaining why she supports this law. And, indeed, she was part of the 5-2 majority that passed it.
Point, it isn't, there isn't any longer an opportunity for an elegant solution to this problem. It's too late. Things had risen to the place where the people who work for us and for you and for all of us in those parking garages were seriously concerned, and I think it's important that we respond to that. And I think it's important that we pay attention to what the unintended consequences of what...
And note, again... Those poor, beleaguered parking attendants, and, you know, I'm not saying they don't have problems, but to elevate their problems to this extent that she is doing and that Tony Madrigal did is to ignore the fact that not one police complaint against a specific individual was revealed as happening in the last year. So the idea that they're under assault from the public is very peculiar because they know they can file police complaints. They know the police will respond. They have to file them. They have to put their name on them. They have to fill out the form. They have to make the report. The police do not have to be present when an individual files a complaint. All the individual has to do is witness the crime and claim they witnessed the crime and have some way of identifying the individual. They can carry cameras. You can buy $7 cameras in the, you know, in Long's if you want, disposable cameras. You know, you can have a cell phone that talks about. There are all kinds of things that can be done to deal with the situation other than making us all into criminals or forcing us all to scamper out like lemmings when we are under what were previously public spaces. So Riley's claim that the parking attendants have the situation has suddenly become a crisis has not been documented. No police reports by the parking lot attendants. There were five police assistance requested calls, but on those calls we got no indication that they actually ever resulted in a complaint, a written complaint being filed that named a particular crime against a particular person. There have been crimes reported in the parking garages, and there no doubt some of these things have happened, but we don't have a record of what those crimes were specifically, just of the general calls for service where people complained of crimes. Nothing more than that. Nothing about arrests. Nothing about the actual time people file reports. So we have essentially a level of hysteria has been generated to create a new law. Yes, Emily Riley, a bad new law to add to the cumbersome mass of old bad laws.
And that we look at it again in the future. But ultimately, for now, it's not perfect. And I'm unhappy that this is as evolved as we've gotten.
It's perfectly awful.
As a human race, but it is where we are right now. And I think that it is important that we put something in place right now that protects our employees or has the intention of doing that.
That's it. Has the intention of doing that? No. You want something that does really protect people if there is a genuine safety problem and you have some handle on what the magnitude of that is. We don't. She doesn't. Downtown Commission doesn't. The information has not been made available or even requested. Instead, it's the old anecdotal approach. If Ryan Coonerty's customers complain, then pass the Ryan Coonerty law.
If it's not able to be enforced, we will find that out soon enough, and it will be important that we respond to that as well.
Actually, you won't. You won't find that out. You will simply find out that a lot of people who are engaging in behavior that was natural and normal now suddenly can't do it anymore. Most people are not going to take the time or energy to try to argue or complain to city council. They've got other jobs to do and other things to be concerned about. They simply will change their own behavior. Some of them will avoid Santa Cruz. Some of them will very studiously scurry out of the parking garages like good little lemmings. And some of them will be hassled by the police. I don't see how you're going to find out anything in particular. It's simply the whole climate will change into a darker situation. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello.
Hi.
I can barely hear you. Let me see. Maybe that'll help.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you a little bit. So I know that there were a couple attacks on women, rapes or attempted rapes in the parking lots in Santa Cruz. And
not in the last year, according to them.
Well, maybe not in the last year.
Okay.
But that did happen.
How many rapes downtown were there, generally?
I don't know, and how many rapes on campus.
Right. I mean, but, I'm saying that is that you want to call.
The fact is, Robert, like if somebody.
Wait a minute.
Is 50... trying to protect somebody else, like as a woman.
Hold it.
I feel like...
No. I'm going to stop you here because it's a 15-minute rule we're talking about. You want to have a 15-minute rule on campus to stop rapes? You want to have a 15-minute rule
in
downtown?
In parking lots, maybe. You know.
Really?
If people are raping each other in parking lots, then maybe a 15-minute rule would be acceptable on campus.
How about a 15-minute rule on the sidewalks? Because maybe that's probably, or a 15-minute rule in the alleys.
Let's get, like, a little bit more serious about it, though, Robert.
This is serious.
I mean, people aren't going to be raping someone in the fucking middle of the public.
Well, that's the question.
You know, and
I'm
the
asking
fact is,
you. Wait a minute.
You're saying that nothing has happened in the parking lot.
No. Yeah,
and that this is, like, a great.
That's right. For the last. Wait a minute.
And I agree with you.
For the last.
You're not letting me speak.
Well, I'm interrupting you because for the last year, nothing has happened in terms of those particular problems. And
nothing that you know of.
Right.
A lot of times when women are raped,
that's true.
They don't even go to the police.
Right.
You know, it took me 3 times of being attacked, you know, through email for me to finally go to the police, and I only did that with the support of our collective.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, so, you know, going to the police is not something anyone ever really likes to do, regardless of if they like police or not. Like, I don't really care for the police because they always, like, try to say shit and make you feel like you're the one that fucked up. But, you know, the fact is, women have been attacked in the parking lots. And if people are trying to do something to stop that from happening, that is important. If we need housing for homeless people, we don't need the fucking parking lot rule to be changed or whatever. We need housing. We need to make I don't know, the fucking motels that make so much money off of
people. I'm sorry, closing off the parking garages, and the parking lots aren't being closed off, but just the garages and parking lot number 9 is not, in my mind, a safety solution for anybody, even for women who are facing this. I don't think that's, I think people are actually more vulnerable with less people around. So
I agree with you.
Well, then I guess we agree that that's a bad law.
I do, but I also agree that, I mean, I also feel that it's important
to address the issue,
that we look at it and see it as, it's not just an attack on homeless people, although it is totally not right because of the way that it affects homeless people. Homeless people should be given housing, though. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't be allowed to hang out in parking lots as their housing.
Mm-hmm.
They should be given housing. They should be given food.
Sure.
Those are human necessities.
What should we do about this law that's coming into effect that criminalizes everybody on June 22nd?
Well, I have a feeling that they're probably not going to be giving the people with BMWs fucking tickets for being in the parking lot for half an hour while they're eating their lunch in their car.
I have a feeling you're right.
Or whatever they do, you know? Mm-hmm. I just have a feeling that they're not going to be going after the tourists. They're going to be going after the homeless people because Santa Cruz has a way of focusing on the homeless people. They're like tolerant to a certain level.
So what should we do?
I think people should probably go to the city council meetings and talk to the city council about it and say, you know, maybe instead of having, you know, these 15-minute rules, you know, like you're talking about these parking attendants, maybe we need just a couple more of them. And maybe they could make walkthroughs. And maybe they could just leave the homeless people chilling. If homeless people are chilling, why not just let them chill? If they're, you know, stealing somebody's bike, or if they're, you know, trying to hurt somebody or trying to rob somebody, well, then they're a criminal,
and
it doesn't
matter whether
they're
housing
or not.
Caller, I agree with you. The problem is going to be that they've just passed a law that makes every single person illegal after 15 minutes, and anybody who hasn't got a car illegal from the word go. So
look at all the other laws they're passing, too. I mean,
right.
That's just like the micro thing, right? I mean, our whole government is totally screwed up.
I'm sorry. Emily Riley was interrupting you again. Go ahead.
That damn woman.
She's always interrupting.
She's ornery, isn't she?
Well, I interrupt, too, so what can I say?
It's okay. I just feel like the law definitely sucks, but I also want to recognize that women have been assaulted in parking garages.
I mean,
and
I think that's
it's a shame. It's a sad thing.
It's a perfectly legitimate concern, and that's probably something that the Women Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women and women's groups and men's groups and anybody should be concerned about and talk about, not about this stupid law. They should be talking about that issue and what, when it happened, how it happened, what do people suggest would be the best way to address it. I mean, you know, you heard Ed Porter suggesting cell phones and, you know, other people suggested better lighting and more police patrols and, I don't know, self-defense classes and cameras. I mean, there are all kinds of ideas around. I don't know how much they would cost. I don't know what the best thing would be. But this idea of suddenly criminalizing everybody, I think you and I both agree, is it kind of diverts attention. It's a way of saying, see, we passed this law. Nothing to worry about.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's stupid.
And I think it's also another way that they're attacking homeless people, for sure. I totally agree with you on that.
Yeah.
And I wish that Santa Cruz was as liberal as it pretends to be. But,
yeah,
you know, right now
too.
I'm in a pretty conservative area of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And
where are you calling
Santa
in from?
Santa Cruz a lot of the time.
Where are you calling in from, caller?
From Nevada.
Huh, okay. Well,
give
us an update.
Actually, it's a red state.
Oh, well, give us an update.
It's fucking scary.
Give us an update next time you call on what's happening with homeless people in your neck of the woods.
You know what? There are very few, if any. That's what I mean. You know, one of the things that Santa Cruz does have is a amount of people that are homeless or houseless. But in Nevada, where I'm at, I haven't seen any at all.
Well,
and maybe it's just that they're really blending in because there's maybe really strict laws. But there's like other shit going on here.
Well,
they're doing like, you know, atomic bomb testing and
right.
crap.
Well,
so it's
what
like
you need
totally
to do is
a lot different, but still the same.
Get get your cap out. Get you do some panhandling on the streets and see how the police respond.
That's a really good idea. Maybe I'll do it with my kids and see if I get picked up.
Oh boy. Okay. Well, I want to hear about that. I mean, I can't offer you bail, but I will certainly talk about it on the radio.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you.
Oh, and I want to send a prayer out and a love out to Chris Brazda.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Yeah, Chris Brazda, of course, is the activist who jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge, as I understand it. He died two or three months ago. He was a man more radical than myself and often more difficult to work with, harassed a lot by the police and sometimes his manner was less than friendly. But he was a man who had a deep concern about civil rights of homeless people. He's been homeless himself. I'm considering, I wanted to throw this out at the all you folks out there, I'm considering doing a free school class on the history of homeless activism in Santa Cruz, or possibly street survival, how to survive these stupid laws. There's not really much you can do in one sense. In another sense, depending on your objective, there are numerous things you can do if you want to expose them and make it more difficult for the city to harass other people. And I'm wondering how many people are actually interested in such a course. And I actually, there are only two, there's a 2 days, in 2 days I have to get this course kind of put into shape. And it would start in July, and it would go through, I think it might be as many as a couple hours every week. If anybody thinks they're going to be interested in this course, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and let me know. And also, you might want to call on air and make some suggestions about it, because I've never taught a free school course. Free school is a service that you can check out on Indie Media. That's www.indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. That's Santa Cruz Indie Media. And it's I took actually one of the classes where we did a walk around town and check out the surveillance cameras and the culture of surveillance. It was kind of interesting. So I just thought I would put out a shout-out there and ask if anybody's got any thoughts on that. Again, the phone number to call if you have any thoughts is 427-3772. We would have some guest speakers like perhaps Attorney Paul Sanford, whom I'm going to try to reach on the phone fairly soon on the issue of the panhandling law that's also coming up at Santa Cruz City Council next Tuesday, or actually it is coming up. It's on the agenda, probably on the afternoon agenda. I haven't gotten a written copy of the agenda, and it's not posted online yet, as I mentioned earlier. But we will have some speakers. I think Thomas Levitt, who does the wake-up call, Linda LeMaster, former chair of the former Homeless Issues Task Force, many of these people you've heard on my show, Becky Johnson, my former producer and a fearless homeless activist and articulate and, voluminous homeless writer, would be hopefully one of the speakers and one of the people giving workshops, perhaps on how to criminally chalk and how to hopscotch and get away with it downtown. She has been arrested for that. Different kinds of ideas about how to challenge these laws, and all with the idea of educating the community. And I'm actually thinking of trying to put together a book on the subject, but right now it's sort of fanciful. I'm not sure where it's going. So here's some more of the Santa Cruz City Council from May 23rd on the parking garage paranoia law.
About this. And so I'm wondering,
Ed Porter,
if the will of the council might be that we look at this in 6 months rather than a year. So I will make that motion to see if that might be possible, that assuming this is enacted, that we review it after 6 months.
Second.
We have a motion and second. Try and make your comments brief, Mike.
I'm going to note that I'm going to vote against it because I think it's going to take a while to gather the kind of information that will help us understand how it's working and whether it's effective or not. I mean, it's not the end of the world. That's my comment.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
How many? Raise your hands. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. Opposed?
No.
Okay. That passes 4-3. I would like to speak very briefly. I will be supporting the motion.
Before we hear Mayor Matthews, the motion that there be a review in 6 months is, I find, largely meaningless. They asked for a review of the downtown ordinances in 6 months in 2003 when they passed the move-along law. No such review ever happened. So, I mean, it doesn't mean it can't happen. It quite possibly could happen. But in laws affecting homeless people that originally generate some controversy because they criminalize areas of life that most of us had not were not previously criminal for us before. It wasn't illegal to sit down next to a building before, then suddenly it is. It wasn't illegal to leave your backpack unattended when you walked away from it, but now suddenly it is. It wasn't illegal to set up a table and gather signatures for more than an hour. Now suddenly it is. None of these things have been reviewed in any meaningful way by the public or by the city council, in spite of reassurances that they would be. Moving on.
To us by a great number of people, by downtown visitors, by downtown shoppers, by downtown business owners, by downtown employees, as well as our own city parking garage employees.
Yet she has no record of the people who called her or contacted her, no numbers to give us.
It was not the result of an isolated incident, but a whole pattern of behaviors that was very troubling. I doubt there's a single person that has run for city council that hasn't said one of their concerns is to promote a healthy climate for the success of our locally owned businesses.
And there it is. There is the true motivation. The idea that if you get rid of the primary motivation is to make this a healthier business climate, not public safety, but to eliminate what might disturb or distress, or as Fitzmaurice put it, make uncomfortable some potential customers. And that is an outrageous reason for denying public space to the rest of us and for criminalizing us, and particularly outrageous for running homeless people out into the rain. It just simply is. There's just no way around it. That's why Matthews has always been so repellent a character to me at some basic level, because she repeatedly proposes and votes for this kind of crap, which comes out of the downtown association.
We just had an economic summit last week. That's one of the recurrent themes. What we have heard from our locally owned businesses, and particularly downtown, is that we need an environment that is welcoming, welcoming for our visitors, our customers, our employees, and so forth.
Welcome to Santa Cruz. Park your vehicle in 15 minutes and get the fuck out.
This is a part of fulfilling that promise. This, to me, strikes a reasonable balance. It has had an exceptional level of public review and comment. I think it's time to proceed now, and so I'll be voting in favor of it.
Exceptional level of public review and comment. What that means is that Ryan Coonerty, who proposed this law, went to the Downtown Commission and demanded they hold a special hearing, which turned into two special hearings, only on this issue alone, and then take action on it. When the Downtown Commission was really nervous about forwarding it to City Council, but they said primarily, our job is to do what these council members who appointed us told us to do, and we have to forward it, instead of actually asking if this would solve the problem and recognizing that there's no real evidence. They didn't have the evidence they wanted in terms of the police stats. They had no evidence at all around the parking lots, even though in spite of that, parking lot number 9 was included. I guess I start repeating myself. For those who want to see that I'm not just whistling out of both ends of my posteriority, you know, go to Google or go to Indie Media, Santa Cruz Indie Media, or indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, which is Indie Media, and look up parking lot panic law or parking garage paranoia law, or look up Robert Norse, and you'll find the staff reports on this whole thing and the figures they give you in terms of the real crime, so-called crime situation. Mainly it's about homeless people. Homeless people, not who are attacking them violently, but who are a problem for them because they have no legal shelter. And so they're going to criminalize another, not just the homeless people, but everybody. It's a cuckoo solution, folks.
Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion passes 5-2.
And that was that with the parking garage paranoia law. And now a few interviews from the streets, and perhaps I'll be able to catch someone on the phone, and we can do a little live interviewing. Stay tuned.
Thank you. And I'm talking with, give me a name you want to go by.
Burke.
And Burke, you're here. Merck. You're looking for a... You're here in search of a little something to eat, right?
Yeah, I haven't eaten in a couple of days.
You're also a man who's outside without a permanent lodging.
Yeah.
Homeless, you might say.
Yeah, with no blankets because it's been raining.
Now, how have police been treating you? You kind of just read this blue flyer, talks about the... What's your name, ma'am?
Christina.
Christina, you say you've been treated like poo-poo?
shit, yeah.
Why do you say that? How can you suggest that our police officers are treating you badly?
Because they think it's illegal to be homeless. You can't do anything. You don't have nowhere to sleep. They arrest you for anything here.
And you were saying?
I was woken up at 6 o'clock in the morning when I was sleeping, and I had to have sleep because I was up chasing after this person to have my fucking money. I had, like, $2, but still, money's money. That's all.
Preempting our space here. So, did you get a ticket or just get driven away, or where did this happen?
Over by Long.
And were you alone or in company?
This was my fiance.
With who?
My fiance.
And was he also told he could not sleep?
Yeah.
And has this happened to you much or just this once?
This happens every fucking day. So, we get woken up by cops and we get kicked out of our space.
So is it the same space or do you go to different spaces?
Different spaces because, well, we can't sleep in the same space or they harass us.
Now, is it the same cops or different police officers?
It's the same.
Same sometimes or different sometimes. It just depends on the day.
Okay, this one, like yesterday, the day before yesterday, we were sleeping in a place. There was litter everywhere, right? We just went there like 2 in the morning to, you know, pass out. A cop woke us up at like 7:30 and he's like, you guys can't be here. If you pick up all this trash, I won't give you a ticket, but if you don't, I'll ticket all of you.
And what do you guys do?
Well, fuck, we don't want a ticket, you know. We don't want to go to jail.
What
so.
An economical way to get labor for the city. A brilliant plan by our city manager to save taxpayer dollars.
Slave labor.
Well, to call it slave labor.
Slave shit.
So how many of you are engaged in this charitable activity?
Her.
Right, you are engaged to her, but how many were actually doing the pickup job?
That's 3 right here.
Okay, and who is this questionable individual with the glasses?
I don't have a name either. Donald Duff.
And Donald, how long have you been in town?
Almost a month now.
And again, sleeping outside?
Yes.
Harassed, what, once a week, twice a week, every night, twice a night?
Sometimes 2 or 3 times a day.
And give me an example of the most recent harassment you've been subjected to.
I was in the park last night.
San Lorenzo?
It was like maybe 8:30. The sun had just went down. The cop came by and told me I had to get out of the park. And I was like, I thought it was a public park. And he started threatening me with a ticket again, threatening me with tickets, told me if I didn't leave, he'd fucking give me a ticket and take me to jail. So I got up and left.
And before that, I think it's wrong, but they have passed a law which makes it illegal to, I'm getting the food. You want to help me get the food? Go ahead, Donald. So you were hassled at the San Lorenzo Park, and before, parks are all closed after dark because they don't want dangerous characters like yourself sleeping or hanging out. You understand?
Yes, I do.
Now, before that, what happened? Anything else? What, the most immediate incident, let's say yesterday or the day before, other than the park incident?
I got woke up one, it wasn't even early morning, it was about maybe 10:30 in the morning, mm-hmm. And I was sitting in a bench, and I just barely nodded off, and a cop came by and told me that I needed to get up and go out somewhere away from people to be sleeping if I was going to be sleeping.
Well, naturally, homeless people are contagious. If you're homeless, the next man may pick it up from you. Don't you understand? You've got to have some respect for the public here.
Right.
Now, so where was this? You're next. I'm going to catch you, too. Where did this incident of criminal slumbering happen? On the bench?
It was down by the metro.
And who was the officer? You didn't happen to notice his name.
He didn't give a name. I didn't ask.
Was he a police officer or was he a metro guy?
He was a police officer.
Okay. And have you, in fact, gotten any tickets in the last month here? Or have you been moved around a lot by police?
Since I'm not from here, I really don't want no tickets here. I have to go to jail here. So
you've been compliant.
Yeah, I've been compliant.
Okay. Anything you want to say to the free radio folks out there about this issue?
No, not really.
Thank you for giving us the update, Donald. Or should I say, your name, sir?
My name is Mike.
And Mike, what's your story? Or what you're observing this soupy activity? What do you think?
It's pretty good. You know, I'm just sad about what's going on. I haven't really got harassed much. Cause I only got harassed one time. I was sleeping on somebody's porch. It was a private property, and they had to go for me. It was like when the cops came in and harassed me, like the people that owned the house, like took up for me and said it was cool for me to sleep there.
Did the police leave?
Yeah.
How nice of them, man. Did they come because they'd been a complaint or because they just didn't like the way you looked on the porch? Or perhaps because of your skin color, dare I say, a little darker than usual.
Actually, what I believe is that, like, when they saw me, I was actually walking up to the porch to sleep. And what I believe is they saw me entering the porch and probably stopped and turned around. Because they definitely not seen them when I was walking up the stairs to the porch. I believe they just saw me and turned around and was like trying to harass me like that.
So how long you been in town, Mike?
For about 3 months.
And you're generally outside?
Yes, I am.
Now, you haven't been harassed because the police are so racially sensitive, because you've been well hidden, because you kicked them $10 each night? What happened?
I don't know. One thing I believe is the racial thing too, because like it's like they don't want to, you know what I'm saying? They don't want to spark up some racial debate, like, you know what I'm saying? That's what I believe personally, because like don't it mean like black people get harassed on the streets too? Like what I've been seeing, it's like don't it mean that black people get harassed by the police down here, man? And I believe they're trying to keep it cool and stuff, man. Racially.
So you think that there is tolerance or just here's Neil Coonerty who's running for supervisor. Hey, Neil, want to speak to the homeless about anything?
No.
Okay. I guess nothing new there. All right.
That's the dude that's making the law.
Here's Marty Wormhout. She's a supervisor, and that is Neil Coonerty, her friend, who is running for supervisor.
Oh, okay.
Supervisor is a powerful post in this county because you get $70,000 a year. You're one of five people who control the destiny of the county to some extent in terms of money, that sort of thing.
Okay. Yeah, that is pretty powerful. So is he the one that's making the laws?
They make the laws in the county. The council members today were making the laws in the city. So.
Oh, okay.
So, thank you for camping. Your name, sir?
My name's Kevin. I got a ticket for camping, sleeping underneath the bridge over there by Long's.
And when did you get this ticket?
Yesterday morning.
And what were the circumstances? Were you alone, in company?
I was with a friend of mine, and we were sleeping, and when we woke up, the officer was like, well, you're getting a ticket for camping, and, I mean, I was just sleeping.
And did the officer give you a place to go?
No.
Had the officer spoken to you before?
No.
Had you been advised it was illegal in Santa Cruz to sleep outside on any public property?
No.
And are you new in town?
Yes.
So, what did the officer say to you when he gave you this citation?
He just said that I can't camp there. And he said, whose garbage is all this? Because there's a bunch of trash around and everything. And I was like, I'll pick up my stuff, whatever's left. I'm not touching it. You know, it's not mine.
Right.
And then he gave me the ticket, and he was going to take my friend that let me borrow his bike. And it's not registered. And if you don't have if your bike isn't registered and you ride it through the park, they'll take it from you.
Really?
You have to pay $3 to the county to get your bike registered so that it's not stolen.
Sounds like organized theft to me. Maybe we should do something to track down these criminals with the badges and guns. I think I know where they're operating out of a concrete structure up there about five blocks, but we'll talk about that. Again, we've been talking with
Kevin.
Kevin, yeah, come to a Huff meeting if you want. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And that's on Wednesday. I'll give you time. Here's a woman giving a speech. What's your name, man?
Linda Edwards.
Go ahead, Linda.
But the meek shall inherit the earth. Who knew that meant we'd all be homeless? Isn't discrimination unconstitutional? No matter how hard we try, we just can't legislate morality or common sense. Laws restricting our freedoms only impede all law-abiding citizens. Unsavory characters will only find a way around the law as they do every other attempt to control their behavior. I'm tired of people with money who use the excuse that it's a free country to be rude and or aggressive, or believe that being politically correct supersedes freedom of speech. Several times I've come out of the store only to find that someone has parked their oversized gas guzzlers next to me, having left their loud and aggressive dogs unattended, making it difficult to get into my vehicle without losing my groceries. There are people who walk their dogs with the I was here first attitude, who stand in the middle of the sidewalk so I have to walk in the street to get by. So should we punish all dog owners because of a few idiots who happen to own dogs? I believe with a little intelligence, a sensible law can be drafted to take care of making our shopping experiences safe and pleasant without targeting a specific economic group, but be fair to everyone. I tire easily and sometimes need to sit in the car to wait for my son or friend to finish their business. Will I be arrested for merely sitting in my car? So are the police required to watch me to see how long or if I've left and come back? This seems to be a big waste of important police time. It seems to me that keeping it simple is the best way for everyone. Anyone who blocks any sidewalk or is aggressive and or threatening is subject to arrest. People who choose to beg rather than steal could be subject to similar restrictions as smokers, at least 10 to 20 feet away from any business entrance, and not allowed to approach or impede free movement of foot traffic. I think asking ourselves why are there so many homeless and working on those problems is a more sensible approach and better use of all our time. It seems to me that when our leaders in the past have had a disregard for personal freedom, this has only led to social revolution and anarchy. Thank you very much.
We've been listening to
Linda Lee Edwards.
Thank you, Linda.
All the way to Missouri, all the way back and forth. On the way we almost got busted, but the cop was a real good sport. Fireflies in the evening, what a beautiful club. Fireflies in the evening, 96 Rainbow, 96 Rainbow. All the way to Spring Creek, all the way back and forth. And when you jumped in that creek, you know it made you want to roar. Fireflies in the evening, what a beautiful glow. Fireflies in the evening, 96 Rainbow, 96 Rainbow. Well, my old friend Kelly, you know he only helped the sisters. And when we said we had to leave, he said he would miss her. With the fireflies in the evening, what a beautiful glow. Fireflies in the evening, 96 Rainbow, 96 Rainbow. Well, we went to Taco Mike's just to take a peek. Saw a guy taped to a tree, disrespecting a sister's body. With the fireflies in the evening, what a beautiful glow. Fireflies in the evening, 96 Rainbow, 96 Rainbow. Well, we overheard Glowing Feather, he was flakier than most. Said we should aspire to be more fluffy and less like burnt toast. With the fireflies in the evening, what a beautiful glow. Fireflies in the evening, 96 Rainbow, 96 rainbow, 96 rainbow.
And that was George Tucker, 96 Rainbow, from his CD. Don't know what it's called, but I bought it from him the other day, or he gave it to me for a donation. Thanks, George, and we'll be playing some more of your stuff. George plays regularly with SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, which plays right after Crow Cause at the Farmer's Market on Wednesday. Wednesday, Farmer's Market, 3:30 to 7, I guess. It's 4 to 7 or thereabouts. A lot of live music. Then over in front of New Leaf, between 6 and 10, acoustic music. Bring your own instrument or pick up what's around there and do some playing. Really quite a live scene. Has been for the last 2.5 years there. People taking back the streets. People trying to use the public spaces again the way they were intended to be used prior to the determination that this was all merchant territory. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I wasn't able to get through to Attorney Paul Sanford, who I hope I will be able to reach next Sunday on 3 days, when I'm going to be doing a longer show from 9:30 to 1. And I will be talking about the upcoming panhandling law, the current bad law we have that criminalizes all kinds of peaceful spare changing, and it's primarily kind of a blank check to the police department and the merchants to remove whoever they don't like around who are doing any kind of panhandling, and it's often used that way. I don't actually recall an instance where a police officer has backed off in a dispute around panhandling. They make it up as they go along, and in fact, that's actually how these laws were created. They were created ex post facto after there was a lot of complaints about police misuse of the law and police harassment downtown in 2002. And when that became the main topic of the Riley Porter hearings, instead of dealing with real police harassment and selective enforcement, they gave the police the powers that said, oh, no, you weren't really harassing, because see, now you have these powers under the law. We'll be talking about the panhandling law because John Maurer, with attorneys Paul Sanford and Kate Wells, won a very significant victory. Not that actually has a lot of impact on, in terms of the particular section of the law that the city council is rewriting, so-called profane panhandling, or panhandling with profane and abusive language. But the idea that this code and this law was written so badly that it is vulnerable to challenge in the federal courts. And that is going to be on the agenda for discussion on Sunday when I come back. So check that out. You can also be aware the show is archived at Huff Santa Cruz, HUFFSantaCruz.org, in case you want to hear parts of the show you weren't able to hear, or in case you want to hear older shows that you missed. That's where it is, HuffSantaCruz.org. For example, the interview with Ron Anisech, which one caller praised as the bad cop, no donut guy from Toronto. The torture discussion about how police raided his studio after the torture tape was played, tape of police officers torturing a man in Tennessee. The police apparently claimed that they were trying to stop torture in the studio, but it looked more like they were trying to shut him down or harass or intimidate or frighten him. And we have a lot of interesting stuff. His show airs on Free Radio, Bad Cop, No Donut. I don't have the schedule. It's not posted anywhere. Oh, no. But I think it's either 11, 12, or 1 o'clock on Thursday, Free Radio. It was earlier today. You can also go to just Google for Bad Cop, No Donut, Toronto, and you'll get his website, and you'll be able to download his shows. I'm going to be playing a little stuff from about a month and a half ago now. I'm jumping back a bit because on May 1st of this year, something very significant happened. A huge outpouring of protest against discriminatory practices against immigrants. And yes, illegal immigrants as well as ordinary immigrants. And it filled the streets. There were thousands of people there and then filled San Lorenzo benchlands. And I played some of that on the air back then, but not all of it was available. So I'm going to play some of it now, and I invite you to listen, and then we're going to try to go out and a little more music from George Tucker, after which it'll be From the Cream to the Dregs with Uncle Dennis. So stay tuned.
There's a massive crowd now on the Pacific side of Water Street. Bicycles are running in a circle, and we have the various brown berets are urging people to go back. The crowd monitors, but some people are coming forward with drums anyway. What an anarchist bunch of scoundrels, I must say. Looks like breakfast and the drums. And there's another march approaching from UCSC. And a police car is slowly wending its way through the area. I guess it was the car leading the rally and march from UCSC. We have a man running around gaily with a Mexican flag. Immigrant rights are human rights. Your struggle is my struggle. And then there's a big puppet. A puppet of a sour-faced fellow about 15 feet high. No immigrants, no businesses. And Tony Madrigal has a white shirt. And various students have linked their hands. Other people are drumming. And we have about 20 bicyclists here, I'm guessing. Lots of folks with video cameras. And the UCSC crowd just keeps on coming. Outside agitator. Here's a man with a tape recorder.
There's over 1,000 to 1,200 people here.
Many signs, and again, it looks like the entire intersection, I would guess. How many people would you estimate? How many people?
Do I estimate? I have no idea. 3,000 maybe?
A large Mexican flag has been unveiled with American flags, smaller American flags being waved. No borders, no nations, no frontiers, says the T-shirt of a woman whose face is half white with a black line down the middle. Estados Unidos para una reforma migratoria. Another big banner that is being held up in the center now. Hey, breakfast. There's old Councilmember Madrigal trying to direct things. It looks like people are forming a... Well, there's a couple people. A guy wrapped an American flag with a bullhorn. Viva la raza! We are not criminals. We are here to work, says the sign. People want to come out in the crowd, but these white-shirted monitors that say organizador keep holding them back. Part of that seems to be to preserve a space. They're preparing a second march up the street, taking back the entire street. And some big media cameras have arrived, as well as a man with pots. 1:30, the crowd is on the move up Water Street toward San Lorenzo. And it looks like a lot of young students. Where are you all from?
Yes, I'm from LA.
Oh, welcome. What, from a school? Resident, local?
Yeah, well, yeah, from the school.
Okay, students from?
We're here for the people.
All right.
We're just trying to be acknowledged everywhere. Immigrants are not immigrants. Come on, we make up the country. We're the backbone. We should do it. We're out here to celebrate. It doesn't have to be a new sorrow.
And no police officers apparently are watching this except in occasionally from the car or vehicle. Ah, question for you for free radio. What legislation would you favor other than the current legislation regarding immigration reform?
The worker is a worker is a worker, Robert.
Yeah,
that's the bottom line.
Okay, so what does that mean for changing the current law?
We believe every worker should have a living wage.
Okay, would that mean changing how immigration happens as well, or keeping the current system?
Changing.
How should it be changed?
I can't do this.
Very few know how to do it. I it's a question I keep asking people because it's an important one. You know, people don't... I mean, obviously they favor opposing 4437, but what changes do they favor instead?
and that people don't seem to know.
I have an answer, but it's a long one.
Okay, maybe I can call you later. We can do a long answer.
Okay.
Is there any place you can refer listeners to that where they might read about this? Or if the answer is written down, if other people have had a similar answer?
Come by the office. We've got a lot of materials on it.
So call the Western Service Workers Association at 429-6016 and talk with?
Well, talk with me. My name's Aaron Sterling.
Okay.
I'm one of the main organizers of unrecognized workers.
And you've been doing this for a number of years, decade at least?
Yes.
And are a lot of your workers impacted by this situation?
Yes.
And I guess, I'm just looking for a couple of quick sentences that might indicate the direction in which you'd like things to go. You talked about a minimum wage, a worker is a worker. How should changes be made in the immigration law that would actually... What do you say to the United Farm Workers' concern that, the Bracero program is a way of, undercutting organized labor that tries to help farm workers actually have some punch and some power?
We need to organize people both inside and outside of unions. We need to organize every single worker in the country.
In a different basis on the unions.
Well, expanding on it, sure. We're certainly very pleased the unions are doing what they're doing, but more is needed beyond that as well. And I think that's a lot of unions realize that, and that's part of why the AFL-CIO split. And we've been focusing on people who are outside of U.S. labor law for the last 31 years. And so we're growing dramatically as that section of the workforce is growing. And we'd be very interested in anyone who's interested in finding out more about what we do, because we need your help.
Is there a website people can go to, too, or the office number? Are you still pre-website on this?
The office number is best.
Okay.
I got to go.
Okay, thank you, Aaron. Talking with Aaron Sterling.
And that's about it for this evening. A very quick story. I actually went up to Representative Farr's office. He's our U.S. congressional representative in this district, and asked for the information about what his recent votes have been on Iraq war appropriations. His staff there didn't have the information available that would give us his recent votes on military appropriations in terms of the general military appropriations and how much of that money goes to Iraq, though they assured me he voted against supplemental appropriations. I said I wanted to know what percentage of the money he did vote for in the general military went to Iraq. They not only declined to tell me that, they said they'd forward the question to Washington, but they couldn't be responsible for even indicating that the answer would ever come back. I left Farr's office several phone messages, and of course we've gotten similar non-cooperation. You can get in touch with Farr. I believe it's 429-1976, either that or 427-1976. Try them both, leave a message, ask what's happening. Here's a story from the Associated Press. Washington President Bush would get $50 billion for military operations in Iraq and Afghanistan for the first few months of next year under a House bill a subcommittee approved Wednesday. On a voice vote, the House Defense Appropriations Subcommittee passed a $427 billion measure for the Pentagon budget year that begins October 1st, including operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. The Senate has not yet completed its version of the amended bill. House lawmakers sliced about $4 billion from the president's spending request for the Pentagon because of what they said were other priorities within the budget and a soaring federal deficit. We did the best we could with the money we had to work with, said Representative John Murtha of Pennsylvania, the top Democrat on the subcommittee. He provided some details of the bill after the panel approved it in a session that was closed to the public. Overall, Murtha said the subcommittee went to great lengths to support the National Guard. The bill, he said, provides $500 million for the Guard to replace equipment tattered in war zones. And it states that the Pentagon plan to drop the number of Guard combat brigades from 34 to 28 is unacceptable, he said. House lawmakers consider the $50 billion for Iraq and Afghanistan the first installment of what they expect would be continued war costs through 2007, although no one would predict how much more money would be needed. I don't think anybody can see without a crystal ball about next year, said Representative Bill Young, Republican of Florida, the subcommittee chairman. If approved, the House bill would push total war-related dollars since 2001 towards a staggering $500 billion. Congressional Research Service, a nonpartisan agency that writes reports for lawmakers, says that since September 11th attacks, lawmakers already have provided $368 billion for military operations in Iraq and Afghanistan and other costs associated with the war on terrorism. Additionally, a bill making its way through Congress now to pay for the rest of this year's war costs includes another $65.7 billion for the Pentagon, much of which will be used to pay for military operations, maintenance, and personnel costs in the two war zones. Lawmakers say the Pentagon is spending about $8 billion a month in Iraq and $1 billion a month in Afghanistan. $8 billion a month in Iraq. I suggest you go to Farr's office and find out what he's doing about this or give Representative Farr a call. Anyway, thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Let's go out on the music of George Tucker.
Hitchhiker on the side of the road, so we stopped to pick him up. Gave him a ride to the gathering, and we walked in with all our stuff to New Mexico. Trace PA Drive. 95 Rainbow. There was food for all of us. We camped for 10 days with all of our brothers and sisters. It seemed like kind of a haze. Oh, but we got pictures of New Mexico. Trace PA Drives, 1995 Rainbow. There was love for all of us. There was love for all of us. There was love for all of us.
Where to
to go after the North Carolina rainbow. In my life, I see a box of stars all around.
Jesus.